My gut instinct is, I just cut out there for a minute, I realized. My gut instinct is that Ms. Glenn has expired. And the fact that if the Modesto address where she's supposed to be residing appears to be abandoned, the yard has not been mowed, there's windows boarded up. We've had people go by there. The address appears to be an abandoned home. The question remains, where is June E. Glenn? So joining us again this evening to talk a little more about this is Craig Kiesler. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you today?
Oh, doing well. This case, Craig, has really piqued my attention. It's my curiosity. Like I said, Craig, I feel like this woman has passed away. And it's something that Rayma, who joined us last week, had said about looking into the VA benefits that this lady had been receiving from her husband, and those had stopped. She said the guardian and the one sister were just in a rage that these benefits had been stopped. Now, Craig, this week I checked with the VA and just asked them simply what would cause VA benefits to stop. And I was told unequivocally the only time benefits will stop is on presentation of a death certificate. So I'm thinking this is exactly what happened. Craig, have you been able to find out anything at all about her whereabouts?
No.
See, we've been hunting all over for her, and I just can't come up with anything. I did send a letter to that California Fiduciary Board, and my goodness, if that isn't a joke, I don't know what is. I still can't get over that with their statement on their supposed newsletter about their mission was to protect the public, not to punish licensees. Well, how can you protect the public when they're under attack from the licensees? So this is, you know, the whole thing is absolutely ridiculous, but here is a group of people who are collecting a paycheck, basically running as a tertiary level protection racket for these professional predators. Now, with that supposed fiduciary that's operating without a license, is she still running?
Oh, yes, she is. She had two court hearings Thursday.
And they still haven't stopped her. They haven't stopped her from...
No, her and her daughter are both doing it. It was a one family that has a trust case and a conservatorship case. And on the probate notes that they issue like 5 days before the hearing to make sure everything's done, the case has been continued like 8 times. And the probate notes are a page and a half long.
That is absolutely... I'm telling you, I can't believe what they're getting away with in these so-called courtrooms. And, somebody has to be accountable for this woman. Is there any way to go after this unlicensed fiduciary? Is there any way to go after her and demand from her that she produce some evidence of either where this woman is or if she, in fact, has passed away?
When the appeal number 4, that was case number F064472, that was the appeal because it transferred out of the mom fiduciary to the daughter fiduciary with letters of conservatorship and after-death powers. And the appellate court rejected the appeal. So they have full after-death powers when she already has her gravesite paid for. She already has it in her will, what she wants done. This is our biggest fear that has been all along. So it changes now. That's not a wrongful death. That's murder.
Yes, you damn right it is.
Murder for profit.
Yes, And this goes on every day. And this is, Craig, this is something we have really emphasized on this show. This is a new form, or I should, a newer form of human trafficking. And
yes, it
involves murder. It involves murder
mm-hmm.
because too many times we have documented where once the last dollar's been drawn off the estate, the last piece of property's been sold, the last bond has been cashed in, these people just fall over dead within a couple hours, and they're cremated immediately, so there's no evidence.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
correct.
I don't believe in coincidence. I absolutely do not believe in coincidence. One of the ladies in the chat room is asking if we know when the VA benefits stopped. And as far as I understood, Craig, I might be wrong here, but wasn't it about 3 months ago?
I wasn't aware of that. I've been watching on the clerk recorder's office that where the after the death certificates are filed. And
okay.
every week I would put her name in, and her name is not in there.
Well, what I found out, too, Craig, is they can, even after death, withhold those death certificates, which I believe is what they were doing with the VA. They withheld the death certificate, and they can do this for 6 months to a year. And they continue to collect the benefits, the Social Security, whatever.
Well, they passed a law here in California that went into effect January 1st, that it's mandated. I believe it's the maximum is 60 days. It has to be filed within 60 days. Otherwise, they're fined for not recording it. One of the complaints with the fiduciary bureau, the person continued to collect benefits, opened up a bank account. I'm trying to find it real quick. It was failure to report, and it says violating section 6561A5 of the Business and Profession Code for failing to report to the Bureau. That's not the one. Hang with me there.
Sure.
But that's what that's what this person did. The person continued doing the estate. Started a new account, didn't tell the court, and on the one instance, the court investigator contacted the facility where the person. Oh, here it is, right here. Okay. See if we got a code here. It's Alameda County where it happened is court rule 7.87. The court subsequently learned of the death of this person when the court investigator phoned the residential care facility where the person lived and found out that he had been deceased. On the other case, the conservator for the client, the person died and the conservator failed to notify Alameda County with the death and subsequently opened a new bank account in a conservatorship. It was four months after the person passed away. And it doesn't say what the amount of time is required to notify him, but it's a violation of California Rule of Court 7.870. On this case,
mm-hmm.
the person's fine was $2,000.
Oh, well, considering the amount they're stealing off these estates, $2,000 is chump change. One of the reps from Boomers Against Elder Abuse is in the chat room, and she said you should be able to get a death certificate from the health department. It has to be recorded there. And she said, or at the coroner's office, and the death is always recorded there the same day. And maybe that is something we could look into doing. I personally hadn't even thought about that myself. And like I say, my gut feeling is this lady has passed away. And I'm thinking the way I went through all the things you sent me and the motions that have been filed and everything else. And it appears to me, Craig, that they are trying everything to avoid dealing with you specifically because they can't produce this woman. And I think that's what they need to do here.
They can't claim that I'm a bad person, I'm a bad family person. I've never met her. I'm just a witness to what has happened to her. It's absurd what they're doing. I informed the Fiduciary Bureau this was going on, and it was their mandated reporter because they're responsible for the license and regulations of issuing the license. They were aware of this. It was last month, the end of last month, April, when I mailed that to them with all the information. And that was my fourth complaint. And they closed it, saying that it's a duplicate complaint. She's already been fined. And the acting chief is dealing with this person on, I guess, to make her comply. Well, she's not going to comply. What are they going to do, take her license away from her? She don't have one.
Exactly. But, you know, that's a double-sided coin there. Because she has no license, she cannot claim immunity. She cannot be given immunity because she cannot be considered a lawful third-party contractor to the court. She's not licensed to do that. So
and for this instance, in California, kidnapping for ransom, if you're arrested for it, bail is $1 million. And if you're found guilty of it, of kidnapping for ransom, abduction, isolation with bodily harm, or a substantial likelihood of bodily harm, it carries a life sentence in state prison without the possibility of parole. Okay? I have personally mailed out over 50 formal complaints to every mandated government reporter. I've sent it to the FBI in Washington, D.C. I sent it to America's Most Wanted Missing Persons Unit. There's going to be hell's going to hit the fan on this because I kept saying the habeas corpus that was filed for her unlawful confinement with the appellate court, they didn't see any concern. And they just swept it under the carpet. They said that the documents I provided, it was attached to the final brief with the judge's signature forged. Everything that was sent in was rejected, and they copied the fiduciary's paperwork they filed. The fiduciary's attorney, their respondent's brief was due on January 3rd of 2012. On December 28th, I believe it was, 27th or 28th, she charged the trust legal fees, $1,400, to go over the appellate's brief. And then...
And she charged $1,400?
To just read
it. To read a brief?
Then she got, and then she got in her car and drove to Fresno, which is 90 miles away, charged the trust $1,325 to personally have her extension handed to her, which it says right in the appellate court rules that it's unequivocally you cannot get an extension without doing it in a timely manner. Okay, the Western Surety, they didn't send theirs in until the 6th of January, and it was granted on the 9th. Their paperwork was due by the 3rd of January. There was a complaint filed because they ignored that rule. Their response was, we granted it on the condition that they won't get another extension. Well, how nice can that be? But the attorney charged $9,500 to go down to the law library and researched her response to the opening brief. She charged a total of $18,000 to fight it, going down the library and her legal fees, $18,000 to oppose the appeal. The appeal was only to get a change of venue in a new county with a new judge with a jury trial and a court reporter. And it was denied, and they were awarded costs and fees, which are paid for by June. Go ahead.
I want to clarify something here. There again, we get down to verbiage and language and how we twist things around to fool you. Asking for a jury trial is not the same mm-hmm. as asking for a trial by jury. You have a right in any court to a trial by jury. But if you mm-hmm. ask for a jury trial, that jury can be just the judge.
Is that right? Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't yeah. surprise me. They
yeah,
don't even allow court reporters in the courtroom. Well, because that would find them guilty of committing acts of moral turpitude, dishonesty, and public corruption. And when you look up moral turpitude, that is the most heinous of all crimes that can be committed. Anybody that works for the government pretty much automatically loses their job. They can't get any other government job. But I guess they, just like the fiduciary bureau, they get out of jail free. You know, they made a mistake. See, they have definitions for mistakes. Inadvertent oversight, excusable negligent. But when anybody else does it, too bad. They sanction you and whatever they decide to do.
I'd put an article up this last week about this crap and all these laws, and people keep saying, well, we need a law for this and we need a law for that. Good Lord, we've got enough laws. And California has very good laws regarding being a ward of the state, being under guardianship.
Yeah, it's cut and dried.
They just aren't enforced.
It's cut and dried. It's cut and dried. The Welfare and Institution Code, they define what elder abuse is, financial elder abuse. There is no ambiguity to it. This is what legislature has stated, that these elderly are subject to oppression, isolation, abduction, and it's our duty to protect these people. And, if the fiduciary bureau says you pay this fine, it's not admission of guilt, and it is swept under the carpet, where's the repeat offender? These are felonies. These aren't a slap on the hand. They're felonies. And if you look up extortion in the legal dictionary, it says a public agency charging a fee for, you know, what they're not supposed to. Furthermore,
to force
in the
you to comply with something,
that is ordinarily a felony. They can't do it. Furthermore, when I reported June Gwynn's kidnapping to the Fiduciary Bureau a month and a half ago, I put in the Welfare and Institution Code that says, a person that closes or subjects that elderly person to be continued to be abused or in whatever, carries up to a 1 year in the county jail, up to 2, 3, or 4 years in the state penitentiary. So when they close that case, they get to go to jail. They'll let the fiduciary go free, but their action by closing the case, knowing that I said right on the paperwork, I will provide you every bit of evidence that will prove beyond any reasonable doubt that whatever they tell you is wrong. And I will testify under oath in front of a judge, and I will tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And I have all the evidence that will support it. There is no excuse. You can't just fall through the cracks with 50 mandated agencies. and these are mandated reporters that the taxpayers pay millions and millions of dollars a year for, and the only thing it does is it protects their job. They get to go to work the next day with their benefits and vacations, all the while turning a blind eye.
Well, and that's the thing we have talked about this on the show before. These people work on a quota system, and they have to file a quarterly statement of what they think the number of people, they don't call them people, units, they will be dealing with during that quarter. And they have to fill that quota. And if they don't fill the quota, or if they don't file the quarterly statement, then the funding from the federal government stops. And that's something else, too. All of this is being funded not only by your state, but by the federal government. They have all kinds of grants and subsidies and everything else coming into this. And so these people, their job is dependent on it. Linda, and I've quoted her many, many times, Linda Kincaid said on one of the shows, if their real intent, their real focus was to help, you know, needy elderly people, you know, that needed to be housed and taken care of, the streets are full of them. But they don't
those
people because they have no assets.
I'm a mechanic by trade, and I fix things. It doesn't matter what it is. I know the concept. I know what it takes to fix. So in amongst my stuff I researched, I found that the Stanislaus County Grand Jury investigated the Public Guardian's Office in 2006 and 2007. They concluded that they failed to meet the standards that are mandated by law. They commingled the conservatives' assets that wasn't accounted for with the county's assets and paid their bills. Okay, well, so there's no proof of how much they took from them. So, okay, well, that was, that's 6 years, 7 years ago. Well, let's go in there and see what it is now. So I went in on the Stanislaus County Court Case Index. I printed out all the conservatives that have public guardians, and I proceeded to put in the dates when the accounting was. Then you're supposed to record in the clerk recorder's office letters of conservatorship. So on the other note, I did those. I came up with 41 on the conservatorships and something like 34 on the other. 75% of them either don't have the required accounting or no accounting at all. And then there was a number of them that their name doesn't even appear in the case index. So this fiduciary, when you look her name up in like 411.com or these other search places, she has 5 aliases. She has 20 past addresses. And this one, she has 2 of her clients named on her address, you know, for, you know, like family. Well, the one is dead. There's 2 affidavits of death. And he split his property, and here it goes off one angle with this stack of paper, and it goes off the other angle on another stack of paper. This other conservatee, he died. I don't know just when he died, but they petitioned the court to become the trustee in 2010, January of 2010. In February, the case was closed. She never became the trustee. And since then, she has filed 15 documents against the estate and did a trustee sale on it and sold the property. And another one, same thing. There's 2 affidavits of death, and all this activity is after the case is closed.
We just saw bills come up out in New Mexico. Marcia Southwick and Leonie Rosenstiel had talked about them. One of the bills was to expand beyond the point of death, 6 months to a year, the grip of the predator. So that was to make sure if they didn't get the estate looted out before death occurred, they had another 6 months to a year to make sure they wrenched every damn dime out of it. The other thing we see is these judges now going back 3 years, 6 years, 12 years, and determining that this person, this unit, that they have declared incompetent without ever meeting the person, had to have been incompetent as long ago as 10 years ago. So they discard everything, and then they do a search to see if anything was sold, traded, or bought or given away during that 10-year period. If it was, then they demand it be returned to the estate so that the predator can have it. And I've never seen anything, Craig. You've gone to all these agencies. You've talked to all these people. You have put your neck on the line, put yourself out there. You have compiled a massive amount of evidence, and not one agency or agent will do one thing, will lift one finger, and this is going on every day of the week. And quite frankly, yes, at this point, unless we, and I've said this before, unless we bust up this Bar Association, get them out of our courts, and unless we get rid of these phony judicial oversight boards and set up a citizens panel to watchdog those courts, we're never going to get this straightened out. One of the things that came to my attention here about a week ago was that the reason our courts run like they do and nobody does anything about it is because they are not constitutional common law courts. They are statutory mm-hmm. courts created by our legislatures. So if mm-hmm. that is the case, why can't we go back to the legislature and say, you fix this? Not that they would, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's just mm-hmm. a thought. You could present the idea.
Well, it can be fixed real easy. If Junie Gwynn has passed on and they do what's already on the law books right now, it's already spelled out in the Welfare and Institution Code, step by step by step by step, and arrest them, and the ones that are conspiring to cover this up, and their bail, and furthermore, swoop into Stanislaus County with the Greyhound bus, confiscate all the files before they can go in there and cover their butt on, I've got 60 cases on this lady and her daughter, okay? There's, her daughter has 25 cases still open. The mom has 10 cases still open. They're on both cases. I mean, they're both on each case, so they're both getting paid. Each one has a separate attorney, so they get paid. But the conservatee doesn't have an attorney, doesn't have any family, and 18 of them are listed on the letter to the Department of Consumer Affairs. These cases are closed, and the property's gone, and there was no family there. And they take that money, they buy their politicians, they do they get their grants. The judge and the family court service manager, they're on the domestic violence deal. There's one for questionable child death. Separately, these people have accommodations that are impeccable. But when they stand together, you got a hit squad that will take your mother out, your father out. It just depends on how much they're worth, and they don't care.
Exactly. Exactly. We're having another roundup here in the Midwest, in Minnesota here, specifically where I am, where we have these law firms coming out and, avoid conservator guardianship. Come to our meeting and let us help you set up your estate. And, of course, this is just databasing. You're just putting a big red X on yourself. I know there's a elder gentleman older than me, that's getting pretty tough these days, but older than me, that lives next door. His wife, let me give you a little background. He and his wife here some years ago sold contract to deed a farm they uh-huh. had to a local doctor and her husband. And they couldn't make the payments because the husband likes to drink and carouse around and gamble, and he plays pool tabs and womanizes and carries on. Okay. The husband brings the wife into the doctor's office. She's got a cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By the end of the day, she's under a guardianship by the doctor.
Huh.
And they take her forcibly out of her home, put her up here in the nursing home. It mm-hmm. took several of us battling like hell to make sure those doors stayed open so her husband can come and get her and bring her home during the day, and then she has to go back there at night. In the interim, the doctor has titled the farm over to her and her husband. They have... They're doing something with the homestead here next door. And just this week, Craig, I saw a silver van pull up in that driveway. It backed in, and they start loading stuff out of the house. So I walked across there, and I said, what are you doing? And they said, oh, they were cleaning house. I said, yeah. I said, but I think we call it theft. And
grand theft.
This, yeah, and this woman looked at me. She goes, what? I said, you put that stuff back in the house. Well, I called about this. I run into the same thing here. We can't do anything about it. Oh, there's nothing we can do. We're not there. You have to go here. You have to go there. I called the sheriff's department. Well, there's nothing we can do about that. If she's under guardianship, I said, she is. He isn't.
Oh, and but in I the interim time, we'll just let them do what they're doing. So once the stuff is taken away, there is no inventory of what disappeared.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it becomes, on Rayma's case, the same fiduciary, they had a court hearing last January 4th, okay? It was to sell the property, get a court order to sell it, and the judge asks, well, don't you want to get fair market value? Yeah. Well, is Creekside Manor here in the court? Yes. Do you want to buy the property? Yes. Well, I'm not going to tell you how to do your job, but... you got buyers out there, and I'm not going to sign this order. Where's your accounting? That's what you're here for. We're going to do a substitution of trustee because she got caught because her license expired. But that's the only case because she got caught. And he goes, so where's your accounting? We don't have it. And another continuance. But they sold this property. It, in 1959, Caltrans bought 4 acres of this 21-acre plus freeway property that 4 acres became the on-ramp on Monta Vista Road. And when they sold the property last January to some foreign people, they sold it, the same property that Caltrans owns.
Chimney.
The deeds disappeared, okay? It didn't go through escrow. It just went through the fiduciary and her commercial realtor that does all these transactions, and they think they own a freeway on ramp, but they don't.
I got, you know, and the thing is, Craig, and we've talked about this so many times here, if you or I pulled something like this, we'd be in prison. They'd never quit prosecuting us.
And we'd have to sell everything we got just for a plea bargain, okay?
Yeah.
It just so happens to be our district attorney here in this town, which isn't the biggest town in the state of California, has a 95% success rate of the plea bargain. Instead of going to court and being subject to 10 times the jail time, well, if you plea bargain, then, you know, well, where's justice there? There's victims out there for all these crimes.
Exactly.
And she is the 95% success for plea bargain, saving the county all this money.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
you're exactly right, too. And this happened to a family member of mine who did commit a crime. Nobody said he didn't. But if he asked for a trial by jury, they were going to give him for this little fiasco 25 years.
Uh-huh.
But if he would plea bargain and admit the stuff he didn't even do, he'd get 2 years. Now, how in the hell does that work?
Yeah. Well, furthermore, that the poor person doesn't have an option, okay? They're not going to get an attorney to represent them. Furthermore, it's a setup, and they can't afford an attorney. So in California, you're innocent until proven guilty if you can afford it. And now you go to jail. But when you plead guilty, the judge is, I'm sure you've seen it on TV, the judge is going to say, do you understand what you're doing right now? You're giving up every bit of rights that you have. You are guilty. You did it. And on cases, they've proven where the person wasn't even in the same state. And so when it comes to appeals, oh, you pled guilty. I had no choice. Isn't there something called duress?
Coercion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things we've also talked about, Craig, quite a bit here is the fact that this is human trafficking. No matter how you slice and dice it, it's human trafficking for profit. One of the worst states that I know of is Florida. And Pam Bondi, the attorney general there, I've contacted her office on numerous occasions because they make a big deal about how they're tough on human trafficking. They're the toughest government in the state on human trafficking. And I said, why will you not include this human trafficking for profit that many times costs people their lives? Mm-hmm. So that some predator, and I said, you've got these predators operating. They're well known. They have sold millions and millions and millions of dollars. They don't consider that, you know. Yeah.
It's under false imprisonment. It gives you the definition of false imprisonment, that you're deprived of your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Then it goes to the next one. In the next one, and they take in account the foreigners that are brought in for the sex slaves and this and that. But the last code in that section is elder abuse and elder trafficking, and it's under false imprisonment. And it's on the books, but where's the plea bargain here? They don't even file charges. And if you go to the state bar, file a complaint, and you have to dot all your I's, cross all your T's, because they're still going to say, oh, well, you have to prove it in Stanislaus County courts. Then the attorney gets to go through the appeal process before they'll even consider looking into violations of professional code of conduct. And the judicial, the Commission for Judicial Performance, they won't even say if they're investigating the judge or not. Because they don't consider it a violation, or they will call them up and say, hey, you got caught. You know, if you get two more complaints, we're going to have to do something. Well, if these people go to jail, this fiduciary and her cronies get put in jail for life, that will send a ripple of effect across this country, sending a signal to every one of them. Because if she is dead, I put 24/7 for the last 2.5 years doing everything I could just as a concerned citizen to prove that this has happened. The Modesto Police Department won't look into it. The district attorney won't look into it. The attorney general won't look into it. The Department of Justice says it's out of their jurisdiction, that they reckon all of them recommend that you get an attorney.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
And pay for this. I didn't know that just because you got old, you lost all your rights. And see, we're talking about people that's the baby boomers. There's not going to be any nest eggs anyway. But these are people that was frugal through their life, and they're held hostage to the value of their estate. And in our case, I took care of my folks' house for 2.5 years. I submitted a bill for doing everything, all the box, all the cleaning, getting everything ready to sell. My bill was $21,000. They petitioned the court to set aside $30,000 just for the arbitration. I got $4,375, and there wasn't one penny left. $26,025 went to the attorneys, the arbitrator, that last penny was gone, the case was closed.
Gee, many Christmas. You know, I was just looking up here, Craig. They have that uniform probate code, and I'm on Cornell Law here, and there's 18 states that have adopted it, Minnesota being one of them, but California is not. And I'll read off the states that have it. And the reason I think this is important is because this requires the sheriff in your county, under Uniform Probate Code, if your state has adopted this, it requires your sheriff to act if you call and report the abduction of an elder. And that's Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Hawaii, Idaho, Maine, Minnesota, Montana, Nebraska, New Mexico. That ought to be of interest to the girls down there. North Dakota, South Carolina, and South Dakota and Utah. Those states have all adopted the Uniform Probate Code, Uniform Commercial Code. This also involves the Uniform Code of Evidence and Uniform Code of Matrimonial and Family Law. And these do apply, but this is the one time where these sheriffs are standing up saying, well, you know, there's nothing we can do under the law. If your state's adopted this, the sheriff is required under that Uniform Probate Code, if your state has adopted it, is required to investigate and report back to you. And unfortunately, you don't have it there in California.
We have in California. It's called Adult Protective Services. And I got my biggest surprise. See, my case was a trust case. It wasn't a conservatorship case. So I spent some time going and sitting in the courtrooms just to see how things ran. In the courtroom of the judge that handles the conservatorship cases, there is no court reporter. There is nobody in there to document anything that went down. They rubber stamp everything that goes through. So what I did was I sat down because I knew a person that was going in to had a court hearing. I tried to find family of June Gwynn, and I wound up stumbling across another family person that was in on another case. And so I just, you know, corralled them in the middle of the street and said that we need to talk. And I knew she had a hearing on Tuesday, so I sent a letter on Friday before and mailed it, knowing that it's going to be in the courthouse Monday morning. And I put in there, I said, this is what's going on. The conservatives have no choice of what goes down. I explained it all in detail, and I said, you know, this can be resolved real easy. All you got to do is call them, and this is the supervisor of Adult Protective Service, is just call the judge up, say, hey, you know, we got a complaint. This is what it says, and it's going to stop right here. Well, the lady went to court on Tuesday morning. She calls me up 2 minutes later, just laughing away, going, ha, and she goes, I don't believe it. I walked in there, and the judge, good morning, ladies. Good morning, good morning. I'm not going to grant these fees you're requesting. I'm going to extend it for 2 weeks, go over it with a fine-tooth comb, and we're going to reconvene in 2 weeks. So I thought, wow, that's perfect. I send a letter of accommodation to the Adult Protective Service supervisor saying, hey, whatever you did, whoever you talked to, it worked. 2 weeks later, they go into the courtroom, and mind you, this is the fifth hearing since November of the prior year, and it's now the middle of April, so it's almost 6 months that they continue to oppose the removal of the conservatorship, because the lady that was doing it, it's in the trust document that she is the one that's supposed to do it, but she lived in Indiana, and they said they tried their best, and they couldn't find her. So 2 weeks later, she goes in there, they're granted all the fees that they requested, and granted all the fees for the opposition. Well, it only lasted for one day, but it sounded good.
Jiminy Christmas. This just...
You, Adult Protective Service is mandated by law. When they get a complaint in, it is mandated that within 24 hours they have to locate them. But in this situation, if you don't provide the address, which is unknown, well, we're not going to do anything. Well, how convenient.
Well, that's what you're trying to do, is locate the person. This is such a cat and mouse game, and it's such a load of crap. And it's a good thing we're on the radio, because otherwise I'd probably be cussing like a sailor. but I tell you, this stuff will just bring you to it, you know.
It's wrong. This is the United States of America. June is a a wife of a veteran, okay, I sent this information to the VA administration, and I pleaded with the VA administration, if all else fails, have it go into your codes, your regulations, that if they become a conservatee, it has to be approved by the VA administration. That would solve, that would, at least 50% of these old people are, yeah, are veterans. No, they didn't.
Well,
respond.
That's what happened. Wasn't it that one fellow that was down there in Texas, Craig, and he was a World War II veteran, and mm-hmm. he had been quite a wealthy man, but he was up in his later years, late 80s, early 90s, and he was guardianized. And when they finally rescued that old man, here he was living in filth and squalor, and some guy was staying there beating the hell out of him. And the conservator, guardian, whatever the hell that person was, had taken millions of dollars from this man. And it was a big blow up. It was a terrible deal. And absolutely nothing happened to the person who did this to him. Nothing. Zippo,
and with Texas the way it is, that's just surprising. You know, they're a sovereign state. You know, they.
Yeah.
But here in California, I looked up the RICO law, and in California, the RICO law says all you got to do for a federal RICO case is for a civil case is prove two things with two different cases were committed within 4 years. And in California, under RICO, you have supremacy law. The supremacy law allows you to override the whole system. It allows the victim to walk in the courtroom as the attorney general, as the district attorney, as an attorney, with that pay, without a license to practice law, and prosecute these people in their own playground. And the federal RICO statute says that they will provide an oversight to sit there and make sure you're able to do your, because they would rather have victims prosecuted because they know the case.
Right.
And what wonderful thing for these victims. That's justice in my book, but.
Well, you know, and that's the thing too, this, the fraud that is perpetrated on family members trying to rescue or whomever trying to rescue these people from these terrible situations, the taking of thousands of dollars and you know, I'll defend you or I'll help you present a case, and then bailing on them at the last minute. I know people that have been through as many as 20 attorneys have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars with the promise that, yes, we'll take care of this and, you know, we'll present a case and I'll get this done. And the attorney, when he gets ready to go into court, suddenly bails. And it's alleged that other attorneys are paying them as much as $30,000, mm-hmm. I've heard through the grapevine.
Because they all split it, okay? It doesn't matter who wins. They all split because they all got it. But yet, at the same time, when those guardians and conservators come in, they seize all the assets, and the families are left penniless. They can't hire investigators. They can't do anything. And then they turn around and say, well, you have no standing. Well, what blood relative? What do you mean there's no standing? And that's how they do it.
Dr. Fettgatter explained that to me. Because they did that with him and his son. And he said what they do is when they guardianize these people, they declare you a legal, not a familial, but a legal stranger to that person, and therefore you have no standing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there again, it's that twisting of the language and abuse of the system.
Because it's like this. In any given family, they're only going to go through a probate once in their life, whether it be their parents or whatever the case may be. They have no concept of what's going on. They're left assuming that the fiduciary bureau is protecting these families because that's what they tell everybody. They'll take care of it. The superior court chief officer and administration staff, that's your probate examiners. See, the probate examiners are the ones that are supposed to go through the petitions and check them for being correct or not. They know that this fiduciary, because she used to be a probate examiner for 15 years, they know that she doesn't have a valid license. The judge knows she doesn't have a valid license. she still gets to file her paperwork, and the court is under probate code 2340, is prohibited, the judge is prohibited from allowing that fiduciary to carry on those duties as a professional fiduciary with an expired license. But if you challenge it, oh yeah, you get another court date and another court date. And when you go to fee arbitration on the attorney, they are arbitrated by other attorneys. And when they bring in the paperwork, they go, well, look at all this paperwork he did for you. Well, what do you mean? I was trying to get this miscarriage of justice turned around. And they're paying themselves. That's why they wanted it. On mine, when I submitted for the bill for taking care of the property, my niece's attorney said, oh, no, don't pay it. And they turned around and fabricated a unlawful detainer saying I'm living there rent-free isn't entitled to it. Well, I have my own house. I've had my own house since 1974. The only reason I'm over there is because the fiduciary won't do her job. And they spent $13,000 of the trust money to evict me. But at the same time, the court clerk sends you a notice that this is in a confidential file for 60 days so you don't get blackballed and you'll be able to find rent somewhere, okay, if it was that situation. But when you
Wait a minute, Craig. They evicted you, filed to evict you from a house that you were not living
in. From my parents' house that I was maintaining because all my dad's tools were there. Everything was still in the house, and we was ordered that nothing can be removed. And furthermore, like you say, there's no security. The railroad tracks are in back of the property. It's a 3,200-square-foot house. And so, but I seen in there where it says, unless it's a employer-employee dispute, a master-slave, situations like that, and it says, well, you must be lawfully terminated before they can proceed with the unlawful detainer. So I responded, this is an employee-employer dispute. Pay me the money that you owe me, and you can do whatever you want with the house. And that was my answer to the unlawful detainer. When it came down to the tentative ruling, the judge, which is an eviction judge, he ruled against him. He denied it because their evidence was their fabricated evidence. I substantiated everything that I said. I have my address. I've got billing statements, insurance, everything that goes back to 1974. I don't have to live there. But
yeah,
they didn't give me my house, which was supposed to immediately be rolled over to me, until 6 months before the case closed, because just in case they ran out of money, they're holding that over my head, okay? And they turned around and sold the house for $170,000 less than the probate referee appraised it for 6 months prior.
It didn't go
on the open market. It went to one person, and they sat on the paperwork because they said after November 30th, they will not take any more offers. And so the 3rd of December, which is the following Monday, they said, well, nobody, offered to buy it. Well, it was on the contingency that if nobody offered to buy it, then it stays in the family, which you know how property value was in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
It was a $750,000 house that the probate referee appraised for $525,000, and they closed escrow at $340,000. They come back and they pay all the closing fees, which was supposed to be split. They even paid the first set of taxes that was due 3 months later. And I can't get an accounting, so I can't oppose it. So my complaint to the Fiduciary Bureau was, your regulation says they have to keep and maintain a correct, accurate accounting available to the Fiduciary Bureau upon 15 days of request. Well, if they're supposed to have it, then why don't they get it for me? That's all they have to do. That's what they do. Well, for that complaint, when I'm in the arbitration hearing, the fiduciary attorney throws it up on the table, the certified letter to the fiduciary to account for this complaint. They turned around and used it against me. And then my niece's attorney, which is doing all the controlling, subpoenas my complaint and all the supporting documents that I filed with the Fiduciary Bureau.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. I responded with going, it's all in the court file.
This Fiduciary Bureau there in California, this is a screaming joke. It's got to be a joke. This has got to be the most worthless, do-nothing outfit I have seen in some time, and these people are pulling in some big bucks for sitting there with that title.
They're not the California Fiduciary Bureau. They have never got to that level. It's only an acting chief. It's not a bureau, okay? They have this seven. It is a puppet organization that says this is what we do. We protect conservatives it's their duty to see that the services provided are in the best, are reasonable and in the best interest of the conservative. Then they put a regulation right next to it. The next one says if the courts approve the fees, then they will not even investigate. Well, that's two different things. The court can only do what's presented. They're not there to say that these aren't reasonable and appropriate fees for services rendered to the conservatee. That's the fiduciary's job. So what they do when they get a complaint, they look at it. Okay, there's ground to review it a little bit. There's only one to do it in the whole state, reviews it. Then they make their notations, send it over. Then they hire an expert consultant, which is another licensed professional fiduciary, to tell them what they're supposed to. Well, why do we need this agency if they can't even make a decision? They're taking all this money, and while this puppet organization, it's extortion for them to collect money for felony conduct. Okay, that is what the claim is, under color of law.
Yes, exactly. Craig, we're going to take a short break here and do a couple advertisements and play some music, and I think I need to find a tranquilizer because I'm getting pissed. Upset, excuse me.
Let's see what some of the callers have to say, okay?
All right, yeah, people call.
I'm sure there's a lot of pissed off people out there. Okay.
If people want to call in this next half hour, the call-in number is 917-388-4520. That's 917-388-4520. If you got questions or comments for Craig, and please confine it to questions or comments for our guest. If you want to be a guest on the show, you can contact me at ppj1@hush.com or call me at 320-281-0585, and we'll set you up if possible as a guest. But please, if you do call in with questions or comments, make them relevant to our guests and what we're doing today. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. So everybody go get a cup of coffee and a cool rag to put on your head, because I know you got a headache. I know I do. We'll be back shortly.
In November of 2011, our Congress had passed a measure to open the door to equine slaughter. Now, a predatory industry seeks to gain profits by sales of American horse meat for overseas consumption. 80% of Americans oppose horse slaughter, and the environmental and social impact will be devastating. To learn more, please visit www.equinewelfarealliance.org.
Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A pure trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a pure trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us.
See, nanocells are real small. 1,000 times smaller than these dust particulates. You inhale it, they go to work replicating, spreading like a virus, multiplying in exponentials. 6 months' time, I could have 100 million people converted. Ditch diggers, porn stars, and presidents. Not one would be the wiser. 100 million people who buy what I want them to buy and vote how I want them to vote and do pretty much damn well anything I figure they ought to do.
We're back. The more I think about this stuff, it just makes you want to bang your head into the wall. It's ridiculous on its face. It's horrendous in its inception. And the fact that it's becoming referred to as a new cottage industry. Just imagine a new industry centered around abducting, isolating, forcibly medicating, and stealing the estate of elderly individuals. My goodness, what a profession. I'd be so proud. We have a caller on here, Craig. Lou, let me get you back up on the board here. We've got a caller on from area code 505. Did you have a question or comment for Craig?
Oh, yeah, it's Marcia Southwick calling from Boomers
Hi,
Against
Marcia.
Elder Abuse. Hi, how are you?
Good.
I know you need a tranquilizer, I guess. Anyway, what I was going to ask is, you know, in New Mexico, one of the problems we have is that a lot of the records are sequestered. It's just impossible to break through that. And, of course, at every legislature meeting, they argue as to why that has to be, the records have to be sequestered because of the ward's privacy, you know, and all this nonsense. But what I'm wondering is California seems to be a little looser. It seems that it's easier for you, Craig, to get records. So do you think that California would be a good place? I mean, you've got a lot of cases there now. Do you think that's going to be the place that breaks through this stuff and really, in other words, it's got to be a little more transparent than New Mexico. So maybe it'll be one of the first states that really blows this thing apart.
No, because on Jude's case, the Family Court Services Manager contacted when June was in this locked-up dementia facility in North Carolina so they could, because she had too much money, and if they locked her up in a dementia facility, they got state aid. This Family Court Services Manager portrays herself as a court investigator, contacts the social worker, Department of Social Service social worker, and this was November 21st, 2007. It tells her she's a beneficiary to the Eric Broderick PG&E settlement. She's worth over $1 million, and we want jurisdiction over the case. And the thing, it's not the fact that you get paperwork here. I've got 45 pages of the social worker's logbook where it documents this. It documents her putting it in a dementia facility with a wander guard on. It documents the social worker talking to the family court service manager and the fiduciary. They are going to get restraining order. They have issued warrants for her arrest. So if she shows up in California to save her mom, she's going to be arrested and put in a mental facility because she's not stable. Nobody's ever met the daughter, but this is what they've done.
Oh, well, nobody who's a family of the ward is stable. You know, they're always crazy,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's case after case after case. I've read that the family
is
portrayed
to be...
Well,
it's only in those fiduciaries' cases that all of her people are crazy. How come it's not in the other ones? So they fabricate it. If you get the billing
statement... They're either crazy or they're only after money. They don't care about the elder. They're only after money. And what really strikes me is that most of the time when these fiduciaries and guardians and so forth accuse the family of something, it's actually what they're doing.
Yes, it is.
It's actually described. And they're looking in the mirror when they say that.
And what you do... Go ahead.
Well, all I was going to say there was... they, you know, harp at these families and scream, oh, they're greedy, and they just want that. This is money they expected to inherit.
Yeah.
It is their right to expect to inherit because they were named in wills and other papers. They have a right to expect that. And I don't see anything wrong with a family trying to protect its inheritance. And I
because it's what the parents built for them. I mean, they didn't build it for a guardian to take it.
Well, exactly, but for some reason, this guardian coming in and looting the estate, well, that's just fine because they did it to benefit the ward.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, when on June's case, her hearing for her custody hearing in North Carolina was December 4th. They filed a petition here in California to be the conservator of the estate on December 3rd. 3 days later, supposedly, they say the judge signed it, awarding them the order to become the conservator of the estate, and issued a $10,000 bench warrant for the daughter that's in North Carolina on December 4th in court with the sister and brother that isn't even supposed to be involved, that's in the courtroom too. They all know where the family's at. So they can't do this by law in the state of California. It says you got to notify the state health department that the conservatee is non-appearing. It's got to be investigated by the court investigator. They're entitled to a jury of their peers. They have to be diagnosed by law with a medical doctor. Well, this didn't take place. They wrote it up. They said it happened. The thing the judge signed isn't on the actual judicial commission judicial council form. It's on an attachment where they draw a line, and it's obvious the judge's signature is forged. The attorney for the other brother and sister that has created all of this, he signs the order removing the daughter and revoking her papers. The day after, the fiduciary walked into the Bank of America and walked out with $100,600 and Washington Mutual for another, it totaled $114,000-some-odd. And then the fiduciary turned around.
It was actually double that, wasn't it? It was double that.
Yeah, they actually turned around, it was $351,000. Mm-hmm. At the same time that she filed it, she hadn't obtained a fiduciary license that was required on July 1st. This was September 4th. She didn't even have a valid license, and they rubber stamped it, but they extended it till because the daughter proved
she
that
did,
she didn't
I think
get served.
She did. I think I found a thing where she did either apply for a license or she registered or she did something. The daughter did. I think we pulled that up, but I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and look.
Well, but, June's daughter was the court-appointed conservator of the estate, and she's
I'm talking about the
fiduciary.
Yes, I'm talking about whatever her name. I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to say her name, but you know who I'm talking about. The two fiduciaries. I think one of them, their license. I think they one of them either reinstated the license. I found some paper having to do with her, and I can't remember what it was, but Linda will know.
Yeah, it was required on July 1st. on or after July 1st, they were required to be licensed fiduciary in order to be court-appointed or appear in court. She didn't obtain a valid fiduciary license until October 24th. At the same time, at the same time, it was discovered that she ripped off the bank accounts without a court order, and consequently, the case the bank froze the account. The Modesto Police Department got a call. They did a welfare check. She wasn't there, but they informed the daughter that, well, if she isn't there, that's the worst place for her to be in the first place. For the time being, being this is going on, see their billing statement of the fiduciary and her law firm. It's documented just like a black book of Al Capone. They documented, and they said, well, you think we better move her? Yeah, well, they sent her to another facility in Fresno. I have the billing statement from the one in Fresno. I have the one from the one in Modesto. Until this blows over, she takes, and it's in her paperwork, that she goes down to the Modesto Police Department with her forged documents, makes them bring out a cop, and look at her paperwork, then follow her over to the facility where June is supposedly held at to show that there's nothing wrong with her. But, oh, I'm sure they're going to bring June. She's already in Fresno. She's not even there. But oh, they proved it. She's alive and well. Well, whoever it was alive and well.
So, Craig, how many cases are you familiar with in California?
Well, I'm aware of this fiduciary's 60 cases. There's between her and her daughter. And the reason because I had all my paperwork done when the case closed. I couldn't get the accounting to finalize it.
You had the same, your mother or whatever had the same fiduciaries?
Yep. It's just, and so what I did was when they closed my complaint with the fiduciary bureau, I said, well, just so you're aware, she lied to you. As she lies to everybody else. Here's a whole list of her cases. It's got the same attorneys. The thing is,
think of the money
average,
these people have made. Think of the money people have stolen.
Yeah. On average, there's 8 to 10 hearings per year. But you go into any court record, to any trust case, and there might, at the maximum, be 3. But when you get these handful of people together, you got hearings after continued.
Marty, I have a question. You know, if I'm talking too much or, you know, getting in the way, just tell me.
Please, this is great.
I've been really thinking about this thing that you've said on a couple of shows about how the judges, they get up to 5% of the beginning value of the Ward's estate, and it's put into a court retail retirement account.
It's called CRIS, capital letters, CRIS, and it's a court retail investment service. And every time a case comes before that judge, on the East Coast, it's 2 to 3%. As you come west and get to California, it goes up to 5 to 6% of the value of that estate is immediately skimmed off the top and put into this retirement account.
Right.
Under
and
that
he gets
judge's
doesn't
name.
Show up in the accounting. It doesn't show up in the accounting. And my girlfriend's going, oh, that's BS. That can't happen. So I go into the internet, just what you said. The judge is getting it. Well, it is the first entry on the internet. They're commissioned.
So then didn't you say, Marty, that in one case you know of, so the stuff goes into this account and he gets the income. So the judge will get the income. And he charged the ward for the taxes on his income?
Yes. And the conservator. The estate pays when that conservator takes money from that estate. Like, let's say Craig was talking earlier about, you know, $10,000 in a charge or $8,000 for reading a brief, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
The taxes on that money is also taken from the estate.
Oh, my God.
And it's added to, so if let's say hypothetically they charge $10,000, and let's say the taxes on that $10,000 was $1,500. The additional $1,500 is taken from the estate to pay the taxes. That way nobody gets in trouble with the IRS. The court proves it, and away you go. And with the judges and these these retirement accounts, they get the interest is deposited directly into their bank account every month. They can't touch the principal. That sits there.
Right.
But that the interest they get to take. And the same thing,
Maddie,
there is also a fiduciary retail that I'm running down. Same deal. And in both cases, anonymous donations of cash and bonds and stocks can be made, and you don't have to tell where it came from.
Oh. Well, on this last accounting last June, on June's case, I really got a kick out of it, because when they started on the case, they charged their first year, the fiduciary fees were $35,000, and the attorney fees were right about the same. Well, they got their tit in the ringer, right? So I say, like, but on that accounting, for the last 2 years, her and her daughter's fees were $875. So they can't say that she's ripping off the old lady, but the attorney fees were $25,000. Now, you know, at $125 an hour, they couldn't have talked to the attorney to instruct him. The attorney here doesn't represent the trust, doesn't represent the conservatee. The attorney is specifically to protect the fiduciary, and here the fiduciary is breaking the law, and they take the paperwork to the attorney that is violating their code. They're misleading the judge and committing acts of moral turpitude, dishonesty, and corruption. So they are co-conspirators to make sure the paperwork's filled out properly. And then when it's challenged, for instance, in Santa Clara County, it was challenged. It was a $125,000 ridiculous fee. Well, when it was contested, the defense fees were $250,000.
Is it one of those cases where the defense attorneys didn't get their there was one state where the defense attorneys didn't get their fees, but then they tried to charge for the fees they spent trying to get their fees. You know,
well,
that case?
On this particular case, it was a person that was involved in two where he was hit by a car twice. Okay, and
right.
Here in California, you can go on the fiduciary bureau, and they have their advisory committee that it's on. You can listen to it and watch it on the video, and so here we got $400,000 worth of inappropriate fees to begin with, which is a felony, and the licensed fiduciary on the advisory committee said, well, you know, nobody complained about him getting $1 million for that, getting hit by the car.
Oh, my God, that's so outrageous.
Shame any Christmas.
Which is irrelevant.
Now I need a tranquilizer.
I'll share mine.
But here, on this particular case, it forced the San Jose Mercury News, she did a number of stories in June last year that wound up being 32 pages in the advisory committee as copies of it to review, because the fiduciary bureau is asking the advisory committee, what do we do about this? What's appropriate fees and what's not? And consequently, the judges in Santa Clara County had one of those meetings where everybody's invited into the courtroom to add their two cents to it, and the judge rejected those fees. But it's not his job, okay?
Was this Kane?
No, Kane's in San Diego, isn't he?
Oh, right. Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, I just heard about that, and I guess he's very the judge rejected the fees that was being charged. He reversed them. So that the conservatee is, he's only in his 40s or something, and he's in real bad shape. So they were going to get done, and there wasn't going to be nothing left. But it shouldn't have to go to that point. The point is, when it was presented by the attorney to the judge, one, the probate examiners are supposed to review it. The court investigators are supposed to review it before it even gets to the judge. So it should have been flagged. and flagged, and there should have been charges pressed against the fiduciary and the attorney for collection of an unlawful debt. But to charge double the amount to defend their criminal misconduct,
right?
Well, that's a win-win situation.
It's so incredibly stacked. Is there any way to, how do you get these people in a RICO lawsuit? How does that happen?
Well, what you do on this particular case with June, if in fact she is dead, they arrest the fiduciary because they're responsible, which carries $1 million bail, and they prosecute them, okay? And they got to defend themselves. There's no immunity there. Plus, she doesn't have a valid license.
But don't you – I'm talking about all these 60 cases. In other words, there must be so many people up there.
When they get done with you, you're penniless and poor and browbeat so bad that they don't have the energy. And see, the way I feel about it, the reason I can't get an attorney, when I went and talked to an attorney last week, this wrongful death, police brutality, goes against multimillion-dollar cases – it was out of his league. Well, June was white, and these guys are black, you know, which I have no problem with that. But the point being is Raymond and I, we wanted to join her on her cases, but only if they go rescue June Gwynn first. We don't need an attorney right now, because if they do June Gwynn's case, it's a domino effect. It's going to send a ripple effect across this country, and they need to make an example. They need to make... show that this is what happens, you know, like the Gwynn law, this should be the Gwynn law.
Craig, Lisa out there in Boston is reading the appellate briefs, and she says that on page 3 of that brief, it says that June was taken to New Jersey.
Yeah, well, see, they fabricated that, because what happened was, like I say, when you compare the billing statements, they're trying to concoct the deal that the daughter was responsible for it, but if you look at the billing statement, when she froze the account and they did the welfare check, they moved her out of town. We've got the law firm that protects the city and the county when they get their tin ringer, same law firm, contacts the district attorney in North Carolina and file charges against the daughter for elder abuse that started... They got beat up on October 25th, 2007. The charges didn't start on the index until 8 of 2008, okay? And they kept those charges. So if she was to come to California anyway, she would be leaving the state, and therefore they've got it planned out in this 45 pages. Everything. It even goes as far as saying that... Well, we know she's got a bond for $104,000, so we're going to go after that, which they collected. Social Security, the social workers there contact Social Security and say, June doesn't want her Social Security no more. Send it to the fiduciary in California. She needs the money. June's in state aid back there, and Social Security is going, you're crazy. And they document this. They go, yeah, they can't believe that this is what we're doing. And it's just Al Capone's black book.
I mean, this case is so bad. It's so bad that I've just never heard anything this bad. You know?
They get worse all the time. Every time I've got to the point where I'm almost afraid to answer my phone because somebody's going to tell me some horror story that's going to make me start banging my head in the wall. It just gets worse all the time.
They're so smug now. They've been protected for so long that now they are really, I think, going overboard. I think it's gotten to the point where if it gets any worse, it's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I think this case is the straw that breaks the camel's back. I really do.
If it wasn't for the Marty Show, this wouldn't be public. because I've been shut up at every angle there is, I have people contacting Marty for my, and Marty forwards it to me. I've got more people volunteering to help save June Gwynn than I have in 7 years.
Well, what,
okay?
What I want to know is Linda, I know she's going to speak, isn't she, in a little while?
Yes, she's coming on at 1:30, yes.
Oh, good, because I think she's the one who really should be talking about all this. I just feel almost uncomfortable talking about her case without her here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the agreement we came to, you know, when she contacted me about the show and
mm-hmm.
everything. So she'll be on the last half hour here.
Great.
And we're trying to get everybody in. And the way we're going to do this, Marcia, is at 1:30, Craig is going to mute up and just let her have the floor. And,
great.
You know, to talk about what she wants to. So I'm waiting for her to call in.
Okay.
So,
listen, I'm going to say goodbye to you guys, but I'm listening.
Okay.
Thank you so
okay.
much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for answering
thanks.
My question. I really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
That was Marcia Southwick, and she's really active. She's one of those boots-on-the-ground activists down there in New Mexico. She and Leonie Rosensteel just have done some major, major activist work down there. And she's the one that she and Leonie keep us advised and apprised of what kind of crap they're pulling in New Mexico. You know, this just absolutely gets worse. I got on Craig just out of curiosity for here in Minnesota. And basically, I stay out of things here in the state because you just become a target. You know, I mean, simply
mm-hmm.
that's it.
Yep.
You become a target. But it's gotten to the point I'm not going to do that anymore. We're going to start really blowing on this hard. Craig, we're down to the end of our time with you, and I believe
okay.
we have Linda online, so I'm going to cue her up and mute you down, and we'll go from there.
Right.
Craig, thank you so much. So
yeah,
much.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, and I believe Linda? Linda? Hello? We have a caller from 678.
Oh, this is Doug
getting...
Frank.
Oh, Doug, hey, how you doing? What can I do
I
for
just
you?
Was listening. I just wanted to say hi and
oh.
thank everybody for their hard work. And, again, Linda's hopefully going to be on there. And but I can just be quiet and listen and just, you know, tell
all
everybody
right.
I'm going to be fighting like hell to change things like everybody else is doing on this show.
Appreciate it, Doug. All right. And we'll go from there. We've got one more caller, and I've got a blind code here, so I don't know who you are. Did you have something
okay.
to say?
Yes. Is this Marty?
Yes.
Hello. And hi, this
hi.
Is Linda.
Hi, Linda. Hi.
How are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, good. We've been waiting for you to come on. We've just been through, boy, I'll tell you.
I've actually been listening. I was on the other
good.
Line, but I've been listening,
good.
And I want to thank you, Marty, for having me on. And there's so much that I would really like to say, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, we just what I'm trying to do is sort out some of the things here with the case now. Do you think your mother is at that house in Modesto?
Well, you know, Marty, there was actually a number of things I wanted to talk about, but I'm going to talk about what you guys were talking about. I'm going to start from the veterans. I am worried
okay.
about my mother being alive. There's a great possibility that she might not be. Now, I did go personally to the veterans myself
good.
A few weeks back. And
mm-hmm.
that's how I found out. Now, you already know through Craig, because Craig and I have worked on it together with the case for over 2 years.
Yes.
Okay. And so when I personally went and talked to the people at the veterans, and I was looking that I thought that I would have found the conservator's name on the documents. Now, first of all, my mother has really too much money to even collect on the veterans. So they
okay.
have hidden her money. They have lied, whatever they've done. But I wanted to get, because I do have the power of attorney, I am still the executor, the trustee, and legally, I am still my mother's conservator. So I have all those powers to get the information. Well, I was shocked to find out that for could be close to 2 years now, that it's not the conservators that were getting the money. I mean, they were up to a point. But the person that has been receiving the money from the veterans up until a few months ago, like I did hear you say that it has been stopped. You are correct about that. It was my sister, the one that chased my mother, that threatened to, you know, slice our throats, her and the brother that started this. But she is the one, and they have her down as the conservator. Now, that means that the, you know, like the ones that we've been talking about, the conservator that, you know, Craig was talking about, they had to have literally, not through a court petition, not through a court order, but literally just handed my mother over to her. Now, my sister cannot become a conservator. She has had bankruptcy. She has had a felony. She has been into, you know, I don't want to badmouth, you know, but she's got a record, let me put it that way. She could never become a conservator. But there was never a petition. There was never a hearing, never a court decision, nothing. So these conservators handed my mother over to my sister. And secondly, in my mother's living trust, she has it down, Marty, that my sister is never to have anything to do with her health, take care of her, anything. That's in her legal living trust. So what you mentioned about the veterans, there's good possibility that if the checks were stopped, my mother is not around.
Right.
Now, I further checked with the coroners. My mother hasn't been there. I further keep in contact with the cemetery that my father and my mother had all prepaid, you know, for. And so that's so, and I am the power of attorney, everything. I make the decision. So I don't know where she's at, but the home, you know, Marty, I did try to tell Raymond, you know, that for the place to the yard needs to be done, you know, or whatever. That is not unlike my sister. I mean, she will not go out and do yard work. And when she goes in, she will use the garage door, open up the garage door, and she'll fly in, and you won't see any movement. And
Linda, let me say, I've had some people out in the area that did a welfare run for me who went by that address in Modesto. And they said there are actually windows boarded up on the house, and it looks as if there has been no activity around that area for quite some time.
Then she would have my mother at her house. Okay.
Oh,
now, and the reason I say that, now, I do want to correct something. It is very important, and when I, for the PG&E, okay, she did buy her a house with the PG&E. When this all started, Marty, my mother did, we were all on the Aaron Brockovich PG&E lawsuit. It wasn't just my mother that got a settlement.
Right.
Each one of us, because I fought for 10 years for every family member, we all received our individual settlement, okay? And that's what the sister and brother used to stalk us and, you know, do a lot of the other things that you've heard about. But if my mother is in her hands, she, my mother has been abused, and I have no doubt. And
I wanted to ask, you know, you contacted the VA, which is good, and that gives us a clue. And have you tried contacting Social Security?
Yes, as a now I did go into them. They told me that they could not. I have to send away and a bunch of papers. Now, like I said, Craig and I have worked on this. Believe me, Marty. He sent papers. I have worked even as hard. He would send a document out. I would send a pile of documents. The ATS. The fiduciary, I've even sent documents. I've turned them in at the Bar Association.
Yeah.
And the last time I did hear with my mother, you know, my mother, they're stating that my mother has a lawyer. Well, my mother hasn't. He hasn't appeared in court for 5 years. And the response
I got
back. Is he
being paid?
Yes. Yes. She is still collecting. It's always $4,900. But he has never sent a letter. He has never had a court hearing. He has, even when my mother was with me, absolutely nothing. Now, I sent the Bar Association all of the documents, all the proof, and you know the letter I got back, do you know what they told me? They told me that, first of all, he denies that he's even my mother's attorney now, which he is, believe me. He never filed a petition to substitute out. He is not off of the case. But he also told them that he is quitting his practice, and the best thing that he's doing is he shredded all of our documents. Now, Marty, our cases, two cases, are open. They are open and active. And he shred
the files? That's
the file, the files, and the bar allowed him to do it. So, anyway.
Well, I wanted to ask you a few, like I say, I'm trying to figure all of this out, what all has gone on. Did you ever at any time notify the North Carolina courts or the DSS to show them what happened to your mother after they released her to California?
You know, Marty, this is something that I hope everybody out there understands, and real quickly I'm going to explain it to you. My father passed away in May of 5th of 2005. My mother was always going to be with me. Within 3 weeks of my father passing away, my little sister, the one we're talking about, threw my mother out of her home of 47 years. So my mother and I, we moved down to San Bernardino. That's where my mother was from, with Hinckley and everything. Now, on June 1st, 2005, my mother and I became San Bernardino residents. We weren't even a resident of Stanislaus County. And actually, I lived in another state, but I was given everything up to protect and be with my mother. And so they pursued us no matter what we did, and it took a year, but my mother did, we did file papers and we evicted them on August 1st of 2006, and that's when they threatened to slice our throats, a lot of police reports.
Who threatened
to
get?
Oh, the brother, his son, and the sister. Because they were evicted legally. You can check the records. On August 1st of 2006, my mother and I filed papers. My mother wanted them out of her home. She wanted her home back because she wanted to sell it. She wanted to move, and she wanted to travel and see her grandchildren and just do whatever she wanted to. And on August the 10th, and the 11th, there are police reports where they were driving by, and there's a police report there, too, that the brother was threatening to slice our throat. Now, I called the lawyer. I called my mother's lawyer. There were witnesses that wrote letters, a whole lot of witnesses, and we filed them, and the courts wouldn't do anything. I mean, that's it. It doesn't matter, no matter how many reports we had of death threats, we couldn't get anybody to listen. But my mother and I were not even Stanislaus County residents, Marty, and that's the stupid thing. The only reason we got into a conservatorship was because of a rotten lawyer that we hired to get the home back, okay? He told my mother if she wanted her home back, the sister and brother were trying, they wanted to get conservatorship of her, and they couldn't. Uh-huh. I mean, legally, they couldn't with their record. But he told my mother that if we didn't sign, in other words, I fight to get conservatorship, and my mother agreed with it, that would be the only way she could get her home back. And, Marty, we didn't understand that a conservatorship would tie us into that county. We had idea. We believed him. That's how we got tied into it. And I might add, my record was clean. I got a $104,000 bond. And after we did that, and we lived in Apple Valley, when we were assaulted, we had actually been advised by another attorney for our safety that that town was so corrupt we would never be able to fight it and we should move. My mother and I moved with the blessing of the San Bernardino court investigator supervisor, okay? He did a report on my mother, and then, of course, another male, a good court investigator in Stanislaus County. We both had reports. My mother was of sound mind, including with her CAT scan. My mother wanted to be with me. She was normal. She was fine. She could do a voter's registration. And they also put it that due to our safety, we had to live in a confidential area. And the wonderful court investigator in San Bernardino advised us to move, and we moved. We didn't live in New Jersey. That's all false. We moved to Delaware. We moved to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And that was in around April, June of 2007. And on our last trip back to California, we were trying to make it back. And they knew,
okay.
and they caught us, and they brutally assaulted us, in North Carolina. And I knew it was personal, Marty, because they took my mother's wig, they took her shoes, and they took her purse.
Yep.
And it's been a nightmare ever since. But my mother and I, for 2.5 years, were stalked, and our lives were threatened. And,
my God.
Then I heard, and then Craig called me. Craig contacted me in January of 2011. And he had been working on his, and he was telling the truth when he said that he had found, they had mixed our a billing up. And so him and I worked together on this for 2.5 years, the work logs and all of that. It was work logs that I had gotten only through the grace of God and my investigating. So a lot of the papers that I had, I trust him, and I sent him papers, and we worked day and night. I mean, hours and hours, weeks and weeks, And so I am very worried about my mother.
Yeah. Are there any of these elder abuse agencies working with you, or are they... have they been of any use to you?
Well, now, see, I'm in another state, so you have, there are some of the places. You have to contact people in California. But just like Craig
right.
said, I sent certified letters to the Adult Protective Service, okay, the supervisor, a number of times. He refused to do anything, and I know Craig just sent him letters too, but when I talked to him on the phone, he told me he was not doing a welfare check on Mama, and the reason for that, Marty, was because he knew the two conservators, a mother and daughter, and they were quote-unquote fine people, and he would not go do, and the other thing was, he didn't know where she was, and that's when I told him. I said, that's the point. You have their address. You know them. Go check their homes. Have them take you to my mother. And he refused to do it. He refused to do it, Marty.
Yes, what's bothering me, Linda, is nobody can produce this woman. No, nobody seems to... This isn't the normal dodging that goes on when we're hiding someone in a facility. I think this is an actual inability to produce her physically. That's my gut instinct. Now, let me go back here a minute. You talked about Aaron Brockovich and being part of the PG&E suit.
Uh-huh.
And have you tried contacting her?
I sent her an email. Oh, it's been probably, it was right before I went to the veterans, and I haven't heard anything back. And,
okay.
Of course, I need to contact her again, and she's wonderful.
I'm going to try to get in touch with her. And then I was, what's wrong with this, Linda? I don't mean to cut you off, but I got so much I want to cover here. One of the things I found was that $100,000 had been taken from your a blocked bank account from
Absolutely.
Bank of America. And what
right. Now, Marty, I know what you're going. Can I say one thing? Okay,
sure.
Because, and I know we're running out of town, but out of time. But you know, Craig has told you about November 26th when she received a call from the sister and brother's lawyer. And okay, this is exactly what it said. She says, and she billed for this. Is, you remember, you know his little where he talks about the diary of the mob or whatever. This is what I'm reading from hers, and she charged for it. Now, mind you, I had never heard of her. My mother had never heard of her, and at that time, Mom and I were both in North Carolina, and she says, received a phone call from attorney, I'm not going to give his name, asking if I would agree to act as conservator for the estate of June Gwynn. He said it should be fairly easy, and then she put 6 exclamation points. Okay, now, we go down, and, you know, I'm just going to 11/27, and to the court date that Craig was talking about on December 6th when she says she became the conservator, she didn't become anything, and she never petitioned. You know, Craig said she, but she, by her billing, she never petitioned. On the 4th, 2 days before the hearing when all of us were in North Carolina, that's what he, now he did bring that up. We were in North Carolina. We didn't know anything about her or hearing. She's even stating that it, she says, phone call from MTC, that was her, okay, regarding bond needed for conservatorship. Meaning, 2 days before she says she became the conservator, she didn't even have a bond. Now, I'm going to fast forward it 4 or 5 more days to what the day you're talking about, to the Bank of America. This is what she says, and she billed $337.50 to do this right here. She says, to courthouse to pick up order and letters of appointment. Had to track file as it was with court investigator. Received certified temporary letters. And then she says, listen, you have to listen to this very carefully. She says, phone call to her lawyer to inform him that the court misplaced original letters for petition.
Oh.
And need new letters prepared. Then she says travel to Washington Mutual to, anyway, get the account to see if, let me get the next page here. Anyway, put the Washington Mutual in her name, and then the next day her entry is to Bank of America to unblock account, which was a blocked bank account of $100,305.26. She says to Bank of America to unblock account and change to conservatorship. Now, by her own billing, Marty, this is very important, she was not the conservator. And by going into the court investigator's office, court investigator gave her a little letter. And then she states that the original letter for petition, not a court order, but the petition was misplaced, meaning she didn't file it. But one other thing real quick, clear down on February 7th, 2008, she says, received a letter from the other same lawyer informing me that I should petition for conservatorship of June. She charged $112.50 for that. Now, what is that, Marty? If she was already a conservator, why would this attorney have to call her to say that she should petition?
Exactly.
But she catches herself with her own mob diary, you know, like Craig, and it is throughout these. And then, of course, the thing with, but to show you, yes, the blocked bank account, I am working on that again. And
okay.
Linda,
let me ask you this. Just give a rough estimate, if you can. How much money have the conservators and lawyers charged the estate so far?
So far, because they've triple billed, and I have proof of this, they have charged well over $250,000 and counting.
Oh my.
Because the one lawyer, the $83,000 that Craig had mentioned, they actually, Marty, charged 2 or 3 times for that. When the one lawyer went to another law firm, even though it was paid by the estate, he went to 2 other law firms, and each time he went to a law firm, he went ahead and carried that bill, and they took it out. They charged again, but it's well over 200. You know, they're over $250,000. So, you know, I just want the public out there to know that my mother's life is the most important thing to me. Now, in December of 2012, I did call Craig. I talked to him, and I did tell, you know, that's when I knew, even through billing, and I have gotten my mother's medical records. See, I'm always sending a way to get. That's the only way I know, you know, hospital records and doctor records, and I have her prescription records and everything. And the billing is in my sister's name. Okay. Now, that's another proof that my sister has her, and my sister, you know, unfortunately, she hates my mother, and. Okay. I fear for my mother because she will abuse her. And by the way, I do have another sister. And my other sister lives in Southern California. She is very ill. She has not been allowed Marty to see my mother either, talk to my mother. And she was told in late April of 2008 when she talked to this conservator. And the conservator told her that she might let my sister, and I will say her name. Her name is Cheryl. I love her dearly. Her and I, you know, we're very bonded. And this conservator told my sister that if she ever thought about maybe letting Cheryl see Mama, the only way she would do it is if she blindfolded my sister and took her to a park by the name of Loma Linda Park in Modesto. And they would have go ahead and let Cheryl maybe meet my mother there, but they'd have to blindfold her.
What in the hell is?
Because they can
God's
get away
sake.
With it, Marty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They get away with it. Have you been able to get like on any other radio shows, any newspaper coverage, anything?
No, you know what? To tell you the truth, I haven't. I haven't tried as much with the media or anything until recently, you know.
Okay. Set you and Craig up with different radio show hosts that I know and see if I can get them to pick this up and get a little more exposure. I've got a good friend there in New York, another one in Montana. I just think we need to get you people out there talking about this. I agree with Marcia Southwick, this is one of the most extraordinarily horrendous things I have ever heard. And Linda, and I don't mean to upset you. My intent is not to upset you.
I know that.
But my gut feeling is that your mother has passed and this has been hidden. I'm trying to figure out how we could determine that. Now, you said you were concerned because of medical records that she was and is being abused. Has there been any current, recent medical entries? Has there been anything at all to indicate anybody has seen your mother?
No, just Sheila. She is in charge with Sheila because even the pharmacy and the doctor, I do know the doctors, and I can't get anything. They were going to give it to me. And then I sent them a certified letter, and they sent me back a thing that I needed to send them in $25. So I sent it in, and they shut it up real quick. They said I had to go through HIPAA, but I know what it was. They talked to, to Sheila. But, you know, one other thing, Marty. Now, I've sent all kinds of documents to the Superior Court. I mean, they definitely know, and I filed complaints. Now, I did let them know, and they did record it. Okay, that my mother has been abused. One of the hospital visits, she was actually rushed to the hospital. She had kidney failure due to a kidney injury. They had to give her 2 blood transfusions to save her life. She was dehydrated.
When was this, Linda? I'm trying
this
to get
this in. This was in October of 2010. See, what I do is every 4 or 5 months, and I send documents or, you know, to kind of keep up. That's the only way I know with my mother, plus my power of attorney. And they also tied her to the bed, you know, so I've got, the, I didn't happen, if it would have happened, if I would have known at the time, Marty, I'd have went there. I don't care. I would have went there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't find out until after. But that right there should have been reported to the APS because that was abuse, okay? Now, as far as recently, no. But I did let the Stanislaus County know, and I did let them know that my mother was abused. Not even the APS was called in. And if something happens to my mother in their hands, that I not only will I go after the county or them, and I did let them know that I would even file charges for premeditated murder against him. And that is filed. They recorded it. And they still do nothing. Okay.
My God.
And but anyway, you know, Marty, I before I hang up here, I know it's getting late, I want to thank you guys for everything that you're doing. You know, I've only realized in the last few months that there was even a site like this, and then I've just recently found out about you, and from the bottom of my heart, I thank all of you. This is the only way we're going to get them. I'll never give up, and my mother knows I'm hunting for her.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, okay. I thank you guys for everything that you're doing. And,
well, I appreciate you coming on. I know it's difficult to talk about this. Craig just has been a how you people have endured this, I don't know. I always wonder that in these cases, how people emotionally, intellectually, just in their souls endure this, because mm-hmm. this has got to be the most gut-wrenching thing I've ever dealt with. And so I do want to thank you for coming on. I've only got a couple minutes left here, Linda, and I want to thank Craig, too, for his input. We'll be talking more, Linda. We'll probably everyone be doing a follow-up with this, because I want to know what happened to this lady. If she's alive and well, I want to know where she is. I want to see physical proof that she is there and she is okay. And if she isn't, I want to know how, where, when, and why.
And well, I can tell you right now, Marty, she will, if she's in my sister's hands, she'll be at my sister's other house. I don't have the address because her and I don't speak and none of us keep. But the only way you're going to be able to do this, and this is what I told Craig back in December, you need to go in there as quickly as you can with witnesses, use my power of attorney. He has the papers. He has all my papers. Get a call it for the police, for a civil standby with my papers, and do a welfare check, and you have to do it quick and fast. Otherwise, you won't find her. You cannot pre-warn them, because they will hide her. They've got people. You know, I don't even want to go. Mm-hmm. I don't want a bad balance.
We got people, too, kid, and we got them looking for her. So we've only got 90 seconds left here. I've got to wind this down. Linda, we'll be back in touch. Craig, I know you're still on the line listening, and thank you so much for taking this time out to do this. We'll be following up with the Junie Quinn case. This isn't the last of it. We're going to get some answers here, one damn way or another. We're going to get some answers, and
we'll just have
to keep pushing. Everybody, thank you for tuning in this evening. I appreciate it. I notice a lot of the trouble in the chat room is over with. That's a good thing. We have a massive audience this evening, bigger than we have ever had. So the shows are growing. Awareness is growing. And more people are coming forward every day with these horror stories. We're going to keep exposing them. And it's looking like I'm going to go to more days a week of doing this, maybe two shows a week, maybe three. I don't know. But just to make sure everybody gets their time. So thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll be back next week for sure. We'll be on Tuesday night talking about a new book that's come out about the corruption in family courts, and we'll be interviewing the author. We'll be back next Sunday. See y'all then.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo, and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.